Hail, hail. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Celtic Lifetime 11 podcast, brought to you by CelticUnderground.net. Welcome back to the Celtic Lifetime 11 podcast. I'm the host, Anthony Murray, and today I'm joined by a friend of a friend and a Twitter chum, Mr. Kez Duval. Me and Kez have actually met in person before, usually on the wrong end of a long festive night out when our mutual friend has brought us together when we've been well on the way, so to speak. Yeah, it was nice to actually meet in a sober sense and have a good blether about something that we both love very much, which is, of course, Celtic Football Club. Kez, a bit of a footballer in his own time, played in a Scottish Schools Cup final a long time ago, which you'll be able to sense how long ago that was from the players he picked. But evidently he could play a bit. I don't know the name of the school that he went to, but I think we can all guess it was a Saint something or Our Lady of X, Y and Z. Anyone who objects to that suggestion that all Celtic fans went through a wonderful Catholic education can suck it up, you know, and being postmodern. Anyway, enjoy the show. Hello, welcome to the Celtic Lifetime 11 podcast, and today's guest, you might know him from Celtic Twitter, it's Kez Duval. Welcome to the show, Kez.
Hi, how you doing, Tony?
Superb. Yourself?
All good. Just in these strange lockdown times, but making my way through every Celtic bit of footage on YouTube alongside some tenants is making it a bit bearable.
Well, is there any like curveball things that you've never seen before? Like new things?
The odd thing. I mean, there was something I'd never seen before. I was just really young. Celtic were playing away in Europe, a yellow strip on again, and they got absolutely battered. It was Admira Wacker, was that the team? Anyway, it was just the goals were flying in. I think it was Peter Latchford that was in goals. That was quite concerning watching that, but thankfully we've evolved from that.
I saw a goal the other day that I'd never seen. It's a League Cup final from the mid-80s that we lost. You know, so it's a loss to Rangers. So a game that, you know, you would never watch back. Uh-huh. But in it, someone, like, we had a free kick on the edge of the box and someone dinked it over the wall for Brian McClair, hit this brilliant volley.
Oh, that was a peach, right?
Oh, what a goal. And it's, I mean, obviously, it's a goal and a loss. That, you know, it kind of gets downgraded. But I'd never even seen it before. And it was, like, absolutely magic, you know?
It was a usual format for Celtic in a cup final against Rangers. You know, batter them for 89 minutes and then, you know, we get done in the counter-attack or a really crappy goal. So, but aye, that was Tommy Burns with a flick over the wall.
Yeah, what an absolute peach. Anyway, we're here to talk about your dream 11 from your lifetime. And as usual, you pick the formation and you pick the players and you justify everything you come up with. So what's your formation?
Well, I'm going to go for a 4-3-1-2.
Well, this is crazy stuff. This is, all right, I'm loving this already. It's confusing me, but I'm looking forward to seeing who fills these spaces.
I had put down a kind of list of potentials, and then I thought, right, you know, you kind of narrow it down, and you think, right, I've got to get him in. That was the only system that could kind of tick the box. So I'll batter through, will I?
There's different ways to do this. As we always say in the show, previous guests have said, a team that would win in Seville. So I think that might be our catchphrase line. Would this team win in Seville? I'm almost certainly the answer will always be yes. But is it purely pragmatic? Or have you got some flair in there, some personal favourites?
No, I try to keep it as reliable as possible. So guys that you think going into battle in a big game, they had something about them. Or they were good ambassadors for Celtic in terms of their style and how they played. It was I'll kind of talk through each one, and it should be kind of self-explanatory. There was a few, obviously, didn't make it, but I would just be self-indulgent with that. So we'll keep to the script.
Keep to the script. Okay, right. So starting right at the back, as always, who's your goalkeeper?
Well, I went for Artur Boric. Just, you know, from the instant he arrived, he carried, apart from being a really good goalkeeper, he carried a bit of a swagger. And I'd never really seen that from a Celtic goalkeeper in the past. We had always struggled with goalkeepers. Even Paddy Bonner, who, you know, was a good goalkeeper, you know, was prone to the odd clanger, especially against the Rangers. Boric was the first goalie I can remember seeing in all those years, that, as well as being really, really top class. He just had that kind of maverick kind of spark about him that definitely gave the back four in front of him. I definitely think it made a difference in terms of how they performed.
Definitely. What would you say if you had to pick a standout game? Would have been his perfect performance, well, or his best?
The obvious choice is the 2007 Champions League qualifier at home to Spartak Moscow.
Sudden death. If it's in, we continue. If it fails, Celtic are in the Champions League. Asking for Lomachenko, the Ukrainian. The noise level. A crescendo. It gets even wider. Artur Boric sends Celtic into the Champions League. It's been a memorable night for Celtic. Artur Boric, the hero. And I'm sure even Lee Naylor will cuddle him now.
And the penalty saves. Again, what he was doing there was very reminiscent of Bruce Grobbelaar for Liverpool against Roma. I don't know if you can remember.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s. And he obviously made key saves. Obviously, the pressure was on. And I don't know. Normally, I would shut my eyes when Celtic got into penalties. But I don't know if I fancied it that night, because I thought Boric has got the, you know, he's got the mental strength to handle that kind of pressure. And that might spook the Russians, you know.
I remember I was in Zagreb during the Euro Championships in 2008. And obviously the tournament was getting played in Switzerland, Austria. But downtown Croatia, you know, because Croatia were quite a good team at that point, one of the favourites for the tournament. And so they were showing all the games in the middle of Zagreb on this giant big screen. And Poland were playing, I think it was Germany. And I think I'd had a skinful. And I was just singing Artur Boric songs, you know, on my own, getting funny looks from all these Croats, like, who's this mad guy? And then when they put two and two together, I was like, oh, he's clearly not Polish, but he loves Artur Boric for some reason. And then they figured that, he's a Celtic fan, he's Scottish, you know, and then people started joining in, you know, singing Artur Boric, the holy goalie. And it was performances like that always kind of rubber stamp your approval of a Celtic player, I think. Do you know what I mean? When, yes, we think they're great, but when they go and play at that higher level, like Boric against Milan in the Champions League, when he just put up the shutters, what performances. And then when he goes to an international tournament and does it again, yeah, you see how good he was.
Well, there's something really particular I like when foreign players come into the club, that obviously, you know, key thing is that they can play, they're half decent, but I quite like it when it's really nice that when the odd one or two, they actually get the club and what it's about and the connection with the support. You know, Lustig was very much like that. But Boric was very much like that. There was a good rapport right away with the support. And he was massive for Strachan during that period.
Yeah, he even managed to turn, not literally turning defeats into victories, but I remember walking out of the pub the day we'd lost at Ibrox. And really, you know, you've just lost a Celtic Rangers game. You know, the league was already won. But walking out of a pub because we'd lost at Ibrox, and really quite down in the dumps, as you would be. And then just as I was leaving the pub, you know, you just look, one last look up at the big screen, and I just saw that Pope t-shirt, and you just saw the place go wild, and you're like, that's one of the funniest things ever. We're walking out of this winners here just because he's just wound them up so spectacularly. He's ruined their day.
I don't think Baza Ferguson was too chuffed about that, if I remember.
It was so funny.
Exactly. You know, you kind of get enough of characters like that.
And I like the fact that I think the interviewer tried to put Strachan on the spot, And yeah, you know, I was never Strachan's biggest fan, but he, to be fair, that day he just said, "Well, you know, John Paul II, he's not a bad lad." You know, what are you going to do? Exactly. You know?
No, I know. I know. It's just typical kind of media scrutiny that they would hone in on that, something like that. You know, but there we go. I loved Boric. I just thought he had. There was a particular spell where he was definitely one of the top keepers in the world at that particular time.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely.
Just big games. Games against the Rangers, you weren't worried about it.
And there was a story. I'm sure I read a story once where someone was mugging someone in Kelvin Grove Park, and Boric like jumped in as a have a go hero, you know, and like scared the guy off. You know, it was daft things like that. It was just like, this guy's mental, but he seems to be on the right side of everything.
He was a bit different.
So yeah, no complaints for me, Artur Boric, a fine choice for your goalkeeper. Now we've got a flat back four, I'm assuming.
Yes, generic.
Do you want to do your centre halves or work your way from left to right or right to left? Or?
I'll go from right to left. Right back, it's the only position, one of two positions where there can't be any dispute, I think. And that man is Daniel Fergus McGrain.
Showing your age. Talk about Danny McGrain.
Well, obviously, when he first came into the team, I would have been too young. But as growing up as a boy, going to Celtic Park, my dad, my papa, and going to reserve games at Celtic Park, it was quite strange to see a player that looked like that, but with a beard. It was quite an unusual thing. It made him stand out. He'd obviously come out of that Quality Street gang with McCarry and Dalglish and George Connolly and the likes. And I suppose, I was thinking about this today, actually. I suppose the way Danny played kind of defined what a Celtic fullback should be. I suppose Jim Craig before him had kind of was the benchmark for that. But when you watching old footage, you see a lot of the attacks down that side, him overlapping David Proven and stuff like that. It kind of set the standard, if you like. And I can't remember too many games where he got the runaround. I just loved him as a player, just really reliable. Played in a couple of World Cups. I would say a genuine Celtic legend.
He's definitely one of those guys that the people that were lucky enough and, you know, of the right age to see him talk about as like A-list, basically. Do you know what I mean? There was times where he was basically the best right back on the planet, lots of people say, which is, you know, absolutely huge for Celtic to produce a player like that.
To be consistent over so many years, you know, it's quite rare. Maybe wasn't the quickest as he obviously got a bit older. He was a good reader of a game and just was really good at linking the play. And I couldn't think of anyone who could get close to him on that side of the park.
Abercrombie into space, McGrain with a delicate ball to Murray McLeod. With Paul McStay. Finding Aiken, now McGrain, Celtic in full cry now as McClure gets free on the right. There's Johnston. Absolutely magnificent. One of the goals of the season. Set up inside the Celtic half, the final ball from McGrain, releasing Brian McClure, his pace. And the final pass to Johnston was perfect. And Stewart this time completely helpless. Paul McStay. Well, Stewart needed two bites. Now that must be a goal for Dundee. Sheer bedlam around the stadium. Well, you don't need to hear any more news than that. Dundee clearly has scored at Dens. And let's lift off here at Cross Street. Oh, what incredible scenes.
Danny McGrain gets in there. This is a pretty good team already. next one of your centre-halves.
This is obvious just because of his sheer ability, but Virgil van Dijk, outstanding, real proper player. How we managed to get him from a kind of middle table team in Holland under the radar. Again, one of those players when he came, played with a swagger. And as he's went on in his career, you've seen that in greater detail, that he doesn't look stressed, you know, when he's up against a tough opponent. It looks very kind of old school, you know, he won't be kind of hassled on the ball or anything. The only thing is, because he was there for only such a short time, it's hard to really think of, you know, instances where, you know, you think, oh, he had a great game there, or, you know, that was a defining moment. I don't think in Scotland he was really tested for, you know, for it to be something as obvious to stand out. But just he just oozed class, you know, proper player, technically sound, and we were lucky to see him for a couple of seasons.
Van Dijk, figure of concentration alongside Mulgrew. It is Virgil van Dijk, though! That is superb! He displays another of his talents. And what a signing this man has been for Neil Lennon. Delightful strike from the free kick. And that is his fourth goal of the season. He is a real talent.
One of my favourite things in football, always has been since I was a kid, is free kicks. You know, guys scoring free kicks. It's probably my favourite type of goal, which, you know, some people disagree with because it's, you know, it's a stationary ball. What's so exciting about that? But I think the ability to execute a perfect free kick is just brilliant. You know, it's something I loved practicing as a child, and something I love watching. And that was one of the things that, again, separates him from a bog-standard good centre-half. You know, the ability that he'd come in. I think early on he scored, I can't remember where he scored a free kick, but he did score a free kick for us. And I remember the next day in the paper reading, oh yeah, Ronald Koeman taught me how to do this, because I think he'd been his coach at some point, and kind of buying into that. And to say, you know, what are the standout moments for Van Dijk? And it actually harkens back to the thing I was saying earlier about the Brian McClair goal, you know, in the League Cup final. Yeah. Van Dijk hit a free kick at Hampden. I think it's the Inverness-Cali game or Ross County, yeah. You know, the handball game.
Yeah.
Was it Inverness or Ross County?
Inverness, yeah.
Right.
Craig Gordon gets sent off, didn't he?
Yeah. Van Dijk hits a free kick in that game that is like, you know, top five Celtic free kicks of all time.
This could be ominous for them with Virgil van Dijk. It is Virgil van Dijk! After a promising start for Inverness, Celtic have a grip on the game. Van Dijk blasted that in.
Up over the wall from a good distance, hits the post. You know, impossible to save. And probably, you know, probably his best goal in the hoops. But again, it's on an afternoon where it doesn't go our way. And we kind of forget about it. But yeah, he could hit a dead ball. He must be... I don't know who's hitting them for Liverpool, because you never see him hitting one down there. But yeah, that ability to do that is something I'll always admire. And Van Dijk had that and scored some absolute beauties.
He could have played... He's one of the players, just because he's so technically sound, you could have played him anywhere. And he wouldn't have looked, you know, he wouldn't look out of place.
Yeah, technically. It really is an absolute... It's going to be a recurring theme on this show, us discussing how the hell did we get that guy? An absolute mystery, you know, in the modern climate. And the thing that puzzled me was when he left us, that it wasn't United, Arsenal and Spurs that were coming to get him. You know, it's like, are you not paying attention at all?
I was down in Southampton for work and managed to see, I was down there for training, and I actually took in a Southampton-Liverpool match. I think it was their League Cup. What's that called? The Carling Cup or...
Yeah, probably at the time, yeah. Carabao Cup now.
Aye. And it was a two-leg thing. And Liverpool had a strong team out that night. He was centre-half for Southampton. And he, without a word of a lie, he was a standout player on the pitch. And I thought, he's not going to be there. He's not going to be at Southampton very long.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
Be interesting to see if, I guess, this summer would have been a big opportunity for the, you know, the Dutch to show up at a major tournament and do something. It's obviously been kicked back to next summer.
They'll do their usual thing when they get to a major tournament and just implode.
They'll fall out with each other.
Aye, they do. Every time they've got a cracking squad, it's you can set your alarm for when you know, three of their best players will have a fight or something.
Almost certainly. Right, so who is Virgil van Dijk's partner in the middle of defence?
Because I'm a Celtic da, and I've got a kind of soft spot for the 90s players that gave everything, but just obviously we fell a wee bit short. I went for Paul Elliott at the back. Another guy who sadly was only there a couple of seasons, but who really ticked the box in terms of what's required for a Celtic centre-half. Just win everything in the air. Quite stylish in terms of you know, how he played and stuff. But just was it was just unfortunate at that time. It was a bit of a mixed bag in terms of the team, in terms of the skill set of the team. That's me being a bit modest on that. But he was top drawer. It was just a shame that there wasn't more players of his caliber in that period. We might have been all right.
Yeah, my dad never has a bad word to say about Paul Elliott. You know, he files him in that upper echelon of, you know, basically as good as it gets. You know, yeah, he wasn't here too long, but he was absolutely brilliant. And, you know, just cursed like many to be around at the wrong time because he deserved better. I think he got the Scottish Player of the Year, didn't he?
1990, I think. He's fine. Was it 1991? 91, I think, when he left.
So he was like, the country all knew, like, this guy's exceptional.
Oh, he could play. Aye. And that, remember at that time, you know, Aberdeen's and Hibs Hearts, a decent team. Aberdeen were really strong at that time, remember?
Yeah.
Hans Hillhouse and the like. So yeah, he was a big blow when he left, obviously.
Did we get any money for him? Was it at least like a Van Dijk or a Wanyama? Did we get a payout, or did we just get rinsed?
usual rules apply. But I think we got a transfer, but I don't think it was
substantial. I need to look that up. Right, okay, good. That centre half pairing looks intimidating to me. So who's our left back? Complete the set.
Left back, I've went for Tom Boyd. Celtic TV's very own Tom Boyd.
Penalty.
Aye. That ref's a joke. He never gives us in, that ref. And then you watch the replay and it's like, oh, right. Tom, I think the ref was right there. Sorry about that. But no, his heart's in the right place.
I heard an interview with him. He did. I don't know if it was the BBC podcast or another Celtic podcast, but he did an interview some point in the last 12 months and he was excellent. You know, I'd never really heard him talk. But I remember listening to that interview and thinking, oh, I love this guy to bits. You know, this guy's a humble, good, you know, custodian for the club. This guy's class.
No, it was how we managed to get him. Well, the best thing about him coming was we get rid of Cascade.
This is a recurring joke on this podcast at this point.
Is it?
Yeah. We've done this material before.
Oh, no. It's like... What's that quiz show where you already give the answers at Family Fortunes?
Aye.
We've already had that one. You'll need to get a buzzer, Tony. We've already had that one. Well, I can choose somebody else now. I'm sticking to Tom Boyd. No, he was obviously the captain that stopped 10 in a row, and it was one of the kind of defenders who, without being silky, was pretty reliable. Good turn of pace. Obviously a good Celtic guy. Played in the World Cup, played in the Euros. Bizarrely, only remember him scoring once. I correct me if I'm wrong. It was away to Falkirk in Brockville, and it was the worst goal you've ever seen.
That could be an interesting running conversation on any Celtic podcast. What was the worst goal we ever scored? I'd always throw in with the Carlton Cole. Carlton Cole's goal is so bad. So
that footage should be deleted.
Are you raising me on a Carlton Cole? Was Tom Boyd's goal worse?
It's maybe just behind it. Maybe I'm being unfair. But it was. We always wax lyrical about the Celtic way and all this, and how we play with such panache and style. And then you see Carlton Cole's goal, or you see that Tom Boyd goal at Brockville, and you're thinking, what was that there? But listen, I've been in.
Watching any old football's very odd. You know, the eye has just completely adjusted to, you know, tiki-taka, you know, Brendan Rodgers, you know, spraying it about left to right. And then you watch any game from the 80s or 90s and just the enthusiasm for giving the ball away by basically all 22 players is fantastic. Even like what I watched like at the start of quarantine, you know, when I was doing my work, occasionally I'd just stick a Serie A game from 1994, you know, like a classic era Juve game, 90 minutes in Italian, have it on in the background. And you'd be watching it thinking, I thought these guys were good. And you watch it now, they're just like every right back, left back, centre half just gets the ball. Hoof. Just don't want it, you know?
Ball into the channel, throw in, back to the goalie, punt it up. A lot of it was speculative.
Yeah.
But the problem is we went from randomness of the 80s and 90s to this kind of really, I don't know what you described.
Well, Rafa Benitez used to always talk about control, didn't he? Control, control, control. And it can be quite tedious.
We got to a point under Rodgers. I know, obviously, Rodgers brought his success, but we got to a point under him where it was, we've actually been keeping the ball for about 15 minutes. Any chance, just throw it in the box. I know that might sound a bit backward, but I don't know. One thing Lennon's done is he's took that on a bit in terms of, you know, we need to kind of pepper the goal at some point.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily a put it in the box guy, but I'm definitely a have a pop kind of guy. You know, I think Scott Brown might look back at his career and say, I wish I'd shot more often. Yeah, because occasionally he hits it right, you know, and it flies in.
If Carlton Cole can score at Stranraer, then anything's possible.
Right, excellent. So this is a fine back four to be reckoned with and protected by three midfielders. Is this left, right, centre, or is this?
Pretty much, yeah. Yep.
Okay. Is one of them more designated defensive than the other, or are they just level?
There's one that's quite aggressive in terms of, you know, winning the ball, and the other two are just proper, just class. Just
footballers.
Footballers.
Right. So a bit like Milan, when they had Gattuso, Pirlo, and probably Kaká. You've got your little Rottweiler, and then two others just to paint beautiful paintings.
Yep. In fairness to the one I've got here who was more of more aggressive, he could play a bit as well.
All right, so who's that? Let's start with him.
We'll start with him is Stelian Petrov.
Brewster had it for a moment, then lost it. They're looking pretty bedraggled at the moment, Dunfermline. Agat's cross came off the head of Lee Bullen, didn't know much about it. Wallace squares it. Stelian Petrov for 3-1. That's the goal which ensures the Scottish Cup is going to be in Celtic hands. 6.5 minutes from full time, Petrov scores his 10th goal of the season. All the composure you would want in this sort of situation.
Who came from CSKA Sofia and decided to learn English from a burger van outside Parkhead. So that was a good start to life in the hoops. Learning the local dialect. No, obviously Petrov came, Barnes signed him, didn't he?
Yeah.
And Barnes, in his wisdom, decided to play him at right back. And then the next manager who came along, who had better ideas, says, we'll try you in right midfield. He was a brilliant right midfielder, especially for Scottish football. Could handle the physical aspect, box to box, get you goals, get you free kicks. That's my only maybe criticism of him. Sometimes, well, it's all right saying that now, but when you needed a goal, you think, I think you've been down a wee bit soft there, Stan, to get us a free kick. Alan Thompson whips it in, bang, Larson goal. It was just a really loads of energy to get up and down. He was top notch. Good thing is that, or the sad thing really is that it took as long for us to see that he could play. But that was obviously because of where he was being stuck at right back.
Yeah. There'll be some folk that probably might not remember this, but I remember before we signed him, he'd played a blinder against England in an international match. And I think Bulgaria had given England a bit of a doing in Sofia. So, you know, his stock was high when we got him. You know, he was this young star. Admittedly, the Bulgaria team was aging and, you know, the team in 94 had been great, but they were well past their best. But they did have this young star coming through. And for us to pick him up, I always thought it was a big coup. And all the way through that dreadful first season, I had faith that he was going to turn it around. So much so that I remember telling people this the summer of 2000, get your money on this guy to be Young Player of the Year next year. Because, you know, you're not the best young player in Bulgaria for no reason. This guy must be decent. And fortunately, Martin O'Neill came in and straight away chipped him with a couple of goals, didn't he? Did he score in the 6-2?
Yeah. He scored.
He did score on the header at the back post.
Moravcik. Ron O'Connor, this is the second one. Petrov. No covering at the far post. And the young Bulgarian given a gift. And no wonder the Rangers defenders are looking at them. Look at the way he crept in there. This Rangers defence, I said,
could be vulnerable in the air. And that proved it again. There's an enthusiasm about this Celtic team, which is exceeding perhaps even this man's expectations.
Yep.
And then he scored a nice volley against Motherwell. So immediately at the start of that season, he's chipping in with goals in front of Lambert and Mjalby and whoever else would have been in midfield at that point. And yeah, he never looked back after that first O'Neill season. He was just a constant threat.
It was just loads of energy. I mean, obviously we were lucky that team, that Martin O'Neill team, had so much fire in their belly. And he really typified that kind of never say die kind of attitude. You know, go and win the ball and, you know, link as quickly as possible with the forward players. And it was just really direct. Just kind of, you miss that now, but obviously the game's slightly different, but it's more side to side than, you know, into strikers' feet.
He did that strange thing where I was at the game because my dad was picking me up from uni at Dundee, and we'd gone to McDermott Park the night he broke his leg at the end of the treble season. That's why Matt Namara played in the cup final, of course, because Petrov was out. And I'll never forget when he came back from the injury. I mean, that's quite a good time to break your leg, you know, over the summer, you know, in terms of not actually missing much. And he did all the recuperation. He was basically good to go, you know, at the start of the next season, O'Neill's second season. And remember he started that, he came back and he scored 4 free kicks in 4 games. He scored a free kick at Juve. He scored a free kick at Dundee, which is, again, one of the best free kicks you'll ever see. It was like a bye kick.
Well, it's a long way out, but Henrik Larsson is standing over the free kick. Petrov is also there. And Stylian Petrov! Oh! Blistering from Stylian Petrov. One of the goals of the season. Breathtaking.
Yeah, Lubo Moravchuk, eat your heart out. What a strike. And again, the goalkeeper is saying, go on, hit it, you're not going to beat me from there. What a magnificent strike of a football. And the minute it leaves his foot, it's going nowhere else but the top corner. And what a treat for the Celtic supporters sitting behind that goal of Jamie Langfield. Hardly any spin in the ball, he struck it so sweetly.
Well, that was of the highest quality from the young Bulgarian.
He just scudded it from miles away. Then he scored at Aberdeen, and I can't remember who the fourth one was. The fourth one's at Ibrox. It clatters through low and hard, and Klos makes an arse of it.
Yep.
So you kind of thought, all right, this guy's going to score free kicks all the time now, and he never did it again. I don't know what happened there. He was so hot at it. But he was brilliant for a goal against the Rangers. You know, he was a classic Hunslayer, and that he always, and often the first goal, you know, the important first goal, he was good for that.
I think seeing it on the morning of those games, the games against the Rangers, or even on the eve of a European game, and you'd be looking at your kind of expected 11, and he was definitely one of the guys thinking, it must have been a nightmare playing against him. He wouldn't give you peace, and you know he's going to work his socks off. As I say, for somebody who came and struggled and thinking, what the hell was he played it right back for when he was just that? It was obvious where his strengths were.
Yeah, and he scored some great goals. He scored a lot of goals. You know, he was a classic sort of modern. You know, in the same way, I don't know, Lampard and Gerrard, you know, racked up, you know, 15 plus goals a season. He was like that.
Oh, the only thing I was miffed about with him, but it's only a small thing, but I don't know if you remember, when we won the league under Strachan and the players were getting their medals, he went and stood on his own.
Yeah.
He was in some sort of huff.
Yeah.
Him and Strachan must have had a fallout or something. But it was quite deflating because everybody was in party mode.
Yeah.
You know, just won the league. And you're looking at Petrov and thinking, how's he not joining in the celebrations? What's the story there?
Yeah, this is his big farewell. Why has he been a stroppy wee bitch, basically?
Yeah, just enjoy it, you know.
To go at a similar time, I think I was always pleased with this. Like, I have no issue with players leaving Celtic when I think they've earned the move. And if we're getting a good bit of cash and they're going with, you know, having been successful, absolutely no problem with that whatsoever. And I always liked that Petrov did sign the contract extension. it probably helped that Martin O'Neill was doing us a favour with, you know, Villa's checkbook. But, you know, he didn't shuffle out on a Bosman. You know, we got a relatively decent bit of cash for him at the time.
8 million, I think so. And then we spent about 30 trying to replace him.
But yeah, that stroppiness was odd. But yeah, a fine player. And I remember in Euro 2004, he'd played at the base of their Bulgaria's midfield. And that's what he went on to do at Villa. You know, a much more deep line player. So a bit like where you've got him here in front of the back four. So I'm very intrigued to see who he's carrying water for and who's in front of him.
Well, again, much like Danny McGrain at right back, Paul McStay.
Good play from Paul McStay. Two men waiting in the box. There's McStay looping it across to Rogan on the far side. It's back to Billy Stark. Appeals for handball against Goff, but still not clear for Rangers. There's Paul McStay. Paul McStay with the opening goal. 21 minutes into the second half. The Celtic end goes wild. A superb strike by Paul McStay. It's only his fourth of the season, but it was McStay who won that ball on the right initially. Looked over the cross. Anton Rogan nodded it down. There was Billy Stark, some appeals for handball. As the ball was then scrambled out from the head of Graham Roberts. Then nodded down again by Morris. There was McStay, and Woods was helpless. Well, Paul McStay taking the game by the scruff of the neck suddenly. Now striding forward, walking on his right. He may go all the way himself.
Fair was a young guy going to games. He was just class. He was just proper technician, to quote our friend in Leicester, or our old friend in Leicester, particularly the centenary season. I think he won Player of the Year that season, and he was absolutely immense. And he just typified, apart from being a class player, to me, he represents everything that a Celtic player should be in terms of how they conduct themselves. I know that I don't want to sound like some sort of moral code or anything like that, but I've got a separate note, I've got a wee issue with Griffiths when he ties scarves to posts and things like that, because I don't think that's becoming of a Celtic player. But to me, McStay, he always spoke well in front of a camera. He led by example in terms of the way he played, in terms of the attacking style, and he had obviously options to go to Italy, and he's a true Celt in that he stayed and fought the battle.
He was outstanding. Like I say, I didn't see him. You know, I was too young really to appreciate the centenary season and stuff. But you know, even in his latter days, he was class. You know, and that first season at the new Celtic Park, you know, there was only two stands, and then the Wayne Biggins stand for the second half of the season. You know, he was still scoring, you know, 25-yard volleys. Not every week, but he scored some crackers, you know.
Yeah, he actually, there was a kind of period where under Tommy Burns' manager, he came back to life again. And then just sadly, obviously, he got the bad knee injury. But when he was linking up with Cadetti and the like, you could see that had kind of rejuvenated him a bit. But he was class, and we're just lucky to see him for so long. And I just admire him, the fact that he stayed to, you know, even though we were going through real horrible times in the 90s, and he decided to stay. And I just think he represents everything that a Celtic player should be.
Yeah, absolutely class. I saw his little brother play a bunch of times because, I don't know, for whatever reason, the Celtic reserves used to always come down to Palmerston to play biannual friendlies, or maybe they were league games, some kind of reserve league or something. But they were down playing Queen of the South. And I saw Raymond McStay play more than once, you know, and always thinking, oh, is Paul's wee brother going to cut it? He never did. You know, like, is John bigger? Is that his older brother?
I think, is that not a cousin?
Aye, he's the one that was headbutted by Duncan Ferguson. Who was the one that played then? Willie McStay. Was he an older brother or a little brother?
I think he was older.
Yeah, I thought he was older. Aye, but the one I saw was Raymond, and he never made it through.
I used to get kind of dragged along to reserve games at Celtic Park. We used to go, it was ridiculous actually how many reserve games used to go in the 80s, and Raymond would be involved. Well, actually a lot of the first teamers would also be involved because it was school reserves where you could have, you know, young aspiring players in with the kind of older guys. But I am sure there's some kind of famous stat about Paul and Willie.
They played a cup final together, didn't they?
Aye. I think, I don't know if they scored, I I think they scored against Rangers in the one night. I think they did. I think
someone will send us a message on Twitter either correcting us or confirming this.
Celtic does make yourself known with that one. I'm sure they did. It was a midweek game and we beat Rangers 3-1 or 3-2. It seems to
sound familiar.
Yeah.
Right. So there's already goals in this midfield. Who's the third man in your Trinity?
Third man is our very own current left mid, Callum McGregor.
So are the youngest, certainly the youngest so far in your dream team?
Yes, got one.
So what is it about Callum that gets him in this dream team?
Well, the reason you can tell by looking at him that he is in total control of the ball, which isn't always the case with some other players that I've seen. He is really intelligent when it comes to knowing when to play safe and knowing when to kind of change pace and knowing spatial awareness and, you know, when to drop when you need to drop, and just a really intelligent footballer that he kind of susses out, you know, kind of game management, you know, when to shift, when to go up the gears, when to take the kind of pace out of the game. I know Brown obviously gets all the kind of plaudits for his aggressive and, you know, with the heartbeat of the team and all that. But McGregor gets us playing. He really gets us playing. I like the fact that he had to go to Notts County to get game time to develop, and we had to be patient with him when he first broke through under Dialer, because it wasn't obvious at that time, because it was obviously a time of transition where you're seeing guys like Wicasso and things like that and other bizarre signings. But he, you know, in years to come, hopefully when we do 10 in a row, you'll look back and go, how did we keep a hold of that boy?
Yeah.
He's the only other young player to get close. Hope I'm not boring you with name dropping. But the only other young player to get who it reminds me of is Liam Miller, in terms of just I can trust him. I can trust him to do the right things.
Yeah. I take a personal smugness from the fact that I saw a lot of pro youth football at that generation. You know, I was living in Glasgow. I had a relative that played pro youth, and I went to a lot of Celtic pro youth games, and I saw McGregor at a very young age, and he was the one I picked out as the guy, you know, this guy's the best player on this team. And, you know, I hope he gets a chance. I think he scored a hat-trick in a youth cup final where we beat Queen of the South 9-0. Now, obviously, you're pumping someone 9-0. You know, it's not the hardest thing to, you know, score a couple of goals yourself. But he did stand out. He looked like the best player. And I was aware he'd gone down to Notts County. But I kind of kept tabs on him at Notts County. And he was like, you know, there's one thing going down to the English third tier and holding your own. He went down to the English third tier and took the piss. You know, he was scoring like Messi goals, like, you know, picking up the ball in his own half and just running it all the way to the edge of the box and then sticking it in the corner. You know, he was such a standout. In a team that had that Jack Grealish, he was there at the same time. And McGregor's the one that the Notts County fans worship, you know, in hindsight, because he really was a standout superstar at that league. Not that I'm saying it's the highest level in the world, but he was a young man, you know, a young boy. And he was so good. So, yeah, I was very patient with him when he came back. And then he just went. I think you have to give, he did well under Dialer, but you have to give you have to give Roger some credit for shaping him into being an absolute star.
It did, in fairness. I just think he brings so much, and even when he's not scoring or creating, the things he does off the ball. The thing that kind of really kind of appealed to me was John Collins, obviously, when he was assistant to Dialer. If he was prepared to throw him in, then that was good enough for me, because Collins could play.
Yeah.
So he wasn't just going to throw in some wee daft laddie that's been doing all right in the reserves. So they must have been seeing that at close hand at training, that he could play a bit.
Yeah.
And it's been worth something that we've done pretty well with the young players, is that we've had to invest in it over the long term, like him. Whereas our friends in the other end of the city, they don't believe in that kind of approach.
I wish we'd do it more often. You know, I mean, for every Forrest and McGregor, you know, I think maybe there's another one that gets chucked and, you know, gets a good journeyman career elsewhere. But he's a level above, you know, he's a superstar. You know, he could play for anyone, I think.
Oh, 100%. 100%. As I say, it wouldn't be until years to come we look back and we go, he actually can do everything.
What do you think his greatest goal was? Off the top of your head, what's the one that comes to mind?
I think the half volley in the Scottish Cup final against Motherwell.
Brown shows. Does a bit more than that. Ustic quickly in. Fabulous finish! Start as you mean to go on! A wonder goal from Callum McGregor! And the double trouble is on already!
It's absolutely stunning. What a strike! You cannot connect with a ball any sweeter than this. You can see he does a bit of practice, he catches that magnificently and off the post. No one is getting anywhere near it.
Because I don't know if you've ever tried a half volley.
With my wrong foot?
Sometimes I try them in the back garden, but they don't come off like that.
Yeah, it was an absolute wonder goal.
It was a peach.
Yeah, he's something else. Big fan of Callum McGregor. So, yep, a contemporary player. In your all-time 11, that shows how well he's doing. Right, so there's our excellent midfield three, and you've got a guy, I guess, playing as a sort of number 10 just behind your front two.
Correct.
So I'm intrigued who this character is. Who are you giving the number 10 shirt to?
Number 10 shirt goes to Lubomir Mrarčík.
Lennon's free kick. Larsson into the path of Lubomir Mrarčík. He's through!
To hold it up under pressure from Bert Kontum and needed a bit of support. It came from Mrarčík, who was prepared to get forward and help him. And from there on in, he had the composure to pick his spot.
Maloney's flick. Oh, Maravchik's going to be in again here. Where are Rangers? Lubomir Mrarčík. Is he going to get a second? You better believe he is. It's a double for Mrarčík. Celtic are heading for their first win over Rangers and Ibrox for 6.5 years.
I couldn't have showed any more composure in. Wonderful finish by a wonderful footballer.
33-year-old nobody turns up Parkhead with a brown suit that's three sizes too big for him. And then Hugh Keevan says, Celtic have no ambition signing this random guy for the Czech Republic who costs 300 grand. And then about a week later, we're thinking, how did we know about this guy? Absolutely, just unbelievable talent.
I think it was in the Celtic Underground podcast with Jock Brown, told a good story about how, you know, they'd gone out to sign him. You know, Venglos wanted him and he came, and the whole squad's thinking, you know, thinking the same thing that everyone was thinking, you know, who's this guy? And like one training session in, Paul Lambert walked into his office and was like, this guy's an absolute genius.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just who? Wow. You know, this guy's something else. And yeah, that debut, ironically, the day Jock Brown got fired or punted or whatever, Lubo finally got a run out against Dundee after we'd been put out of Europe in Zurich, I think it was. And yeah, to see a young Mark Burchill getting thrown in with Lubo behind him, and Lubo just ran the show.
It always amazes me when you see players like that and you're thinking, he's not got much pace. So how's he creating all these chances, scoring goals? I mean, you could, you know, the list is endless in terms of footballers you've seen who you look at their kind of strengths and weaknesses, but he had zero pace whatsoever, but he could make space for himself. And his final ball for Larsson and the forward players was ridiculous. We just put it in a right on the other head. Remember that game? Was it 6-2 that game or 6-1 or something?
Yeah. And he put one with the outside of his foot on a dish.
Left foot, right foot. And then his greatest moment in the hoops was controlling the ball with his arse against Hearts.
So to give the listener some detail, I think he'd hit a corner, he'd get headed out or booted out of the box, way up into the sky. It's fallen from, you know, it's a total moon ball, falling from the sky. And he just, in one manoeuvre, pivots over the following ball and half volleys it off his own ass and kills it, basically.
Correct. If he'd if he'd have just controlled it, he would have got an applause. He would have got a round of applause for that. But that was, you know, I like that cheekiness. But you can, you know, down the years we miss, you know, when players like that move on, we miss the kind of mercurial number 10 types, because they would fit in so well in terms of how we play.
And you're right about the cheekiness. There was, I mean, to go back to the quote when he arrives, you know, I think after the 5-1 game, the interviewer said, well, how does it feel like to go from zero to hero? And he just said, I was never a zero.
Aye.
It's like, you said, he knew he wasn't, you know?
Aye. I remember reading a quote from Zidane, and he thought he was quite good, so that's that sounds all right.
I remember the day is, it was before the, well, it probably came out as a DVD as well, but the, you know, there was a video came out of like all Lubo's goals. You know, Celtic had produced it, and it all is like pre-Celtic footage on it as well. So loads of goals in Ligue 1 for Saint-Étienne and Bastia and stuff like that. And I was at uni, and I remember running down the street to buy it, like the day it came out, like running to an HMV, bagging class, because I just wanted to watch this Lubo video. I think it was A Gift from God, it was called, or something like that.
Yeah,
he must have, yeah. It must have been part of his contract. He must have got a cut of that. But I just sat and watched that video on loop for days, you know, just shouting at, you know, flatmates, come and see this. Come and guy's hitting free kicks with his both feet, and I just unbelievable.
And what would that kind of player cost now?
He'd be proper A-list. He'd be in La Liga or Serie A or the Premier League. And he'd just be an absolute phenomenon. My favourite Lubo moment, I think, is, because one of the things that kind of annoys me is that even Martin O'Neill was on the radio the other day talking about how good Lubo was. And Martin O'Neill didn't always play Lubo.
I know.
You know, Martin O'Neill used to leave him out, and you'd be sitting thinking, this guy's better than everyone on the park. Why is he not playing? One example of that was the night we were playing Motherwell, you know, trying to get the treble season, but still, you know, not mathematically secure. You know, wanting to get the points on the board so we were the champions. And it was a game against Motherwell at home. And it was one of those nights where Andy Gorham just put up the blockers, you know. We were not going to beat Andy Gorham that night. He was saving everything. And then we got a free kick on the edge of the box. Lubo had just come on. And he just, you know, just a classic up and over the wall, top corner. And Gorham not getting anywhere near it. And visibly being angry. You know, not just, oh, I've let in a goal, I'm a bit annoyed, like punching the ball into the net with fury, and Lubo running away like a little aeroplane. That was, for me, my finest Lubo moment.
I remember that. It was like Gorham was doing his usual against us, and it was just, you couldn't see where a goal was coming from, and Lubo just pinged it in the top corner. But I agree with you that Anil was kind of guilty of that, wasn't he? Like, particularly in tight games where you think, if you can get Mravchek linking up with Larsson, that's shoot you in.
And then, of course, he started him in the Juve game, didn't he? And he tore young Pavel Nedved a new one, you know, his protege to some extent, you know, if you allow for a Czechoslovak border.
And he was like that, though. He was very cagey, wasn't he? He was very kind of, you know, percentages go always kind of trust. Fair enough, it worked, didn't it?
Now, so Lubo is feeding a front two. I am the biggest fan of a front two. I think the guy who did away with a front two killed football to an extent. So I'm ecstatic to see we've got a front two here. I'm going to assume this is going to be a routine in this show where I say Larsson's there and then we don't really talk about Larsson because we don't need to. But Larsson's there, right?
Some Swedish guy up front with dreadlocks, scored some goals. He scored a good chip once against Rangers. That's pretty much about it.
It's quite funny that, I don't think I've ever said this anywhere before, but I'm not the biggest fan of dreadlocks. I don't get dreadlocks. Watching the 1994 World Cup and seeing this guy with blonde dreadlocks and just being like, my gut was, I don't like that guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got blonde dreadlocks. What's that all about? And then a couple of years later, we get linked with him. It's like, oh, we're signing that blonde dreadlock guy. I don't know how I feel about this.
I learned to put up with it. I tolerate.
He quickly turned us round.
No, it's fine. What else can you say about Larsson? Just a ridiculous player. One thing I would like to say about him is how unselfish he was. He one of those players, rare players, that has the brains to say, well, I can't score for this position, so I'll just square it to my mate and he can score. But you don't. That's kind of that's quite rare to get that in a striker.
I mean, the night he had the two assists against Lyon in the Champions League, Liam Miller and Chris Sutton headers, both of them.
Yep.
And Larsson just, you know, scooped them in on a dish both times. Just absolutely phenomenal footballer.
Celtic were outstanding that night.
Yeah.
Against Lyon, they played like a proper high intensity passing game that night, and we hadn't really seen much proof of that previous to that. You know, that kind of style.
It goes back to what you were saying earlier about Liam Miller. You know, let's not spend too long talking about him, but Liam Miller came in and really looked outstanding. It didn't last long for several reasons, but he, at that moment, I guess that'd be the peak of his Celtic career. He came in, played next to Sutton and Larsson, and looked as good as anyone.
Oh, he was a true talent, but obviously he had a chance to go to Man United, so...
Yeah, there's a reason Man United were in for him, because of a night like that where he lit up the biggest... stage there is. I think if I had to try and go off the wall and say something interesting about Larsson that people haven't heard before, I loved the night he left it on Gus McPherson. Remember? Larsson had spent a couple of years getting hoofed up in the air by shite Scottish journeymen. And then one night, I guess he slyly just, you know, left a stud in and left a big gash on Gus McPherson's leg. And the media tried to create a furore, and Gus McPherson was all boo-hoo, woe is me. And Larsson never said a word. I doubt he ever mentioned it. He just, you know, pretty cunning, pretty cheeky, but a bit of nastiness, which you need at times.
Well, that's one thing I respect about Craig Moore of that mob. Him and Larsson used to spend 90 minutes knocking hell at each other.
Yeah.
And Larsson would get whacked and just dust his cell down and get back up and no complain. And then Larsson would stick one on Moore. And likewise, he wouldn't complain either. That quite, again, don't want to sound like an old game, but that's kind of missing now in football.
Yeah. Whenever anyone asks me who's the dirtiest player I ever saw, Moore's always my first answer. Moore was absolute filth. But Larsson, in that context, certainly gave as good as he got.
Well, I liked how they accepted that was the gig. And
you know,
there's none of this greeting to the ref.
Yeah, that reminds me, I think one of the best examples of that I saw was, remember the night John Carew and Bobo Baldi went 12 rounds? That was just comical, because that was a heavyweight bout, you know, that really was daft, but they just went at it all night. But yeah, that is missed from football, and it's something you appreciate on the rare occasion it pops up. But yeah, so now, who joins Larsson up front?
Well, I've been a wee bit self-indulgent, Anthony, and I've went for Brian McClure.
I didn't know that. And he got a mention at the start, a bit of foreshadowing. That was a complete accident. Right, Brian McClure, take it away.
I mean, I could have picked any. I had about five in mind that I thought, right, when I was a wee guy growing up, who was the kind of player I really loved to watch? And it was him. Again, I've got this thing about players that don't have much pace, but they can make things happen. And McClure was like a goal. He was a goal machine for Celtic.
Yeah.
But he didn't have any. He didn't have a turn of pace or anything like that. The one game that just stands out. Again, I was a wee guy. It was a European night, 1983, and Celtic beat Sport Lisbon 5-0. And Celtic absolutely ran riot that night. And McClure was outstanding. If you see it, I think the goals should be on YouTube, I think. But then the third goal is just a thing of beauty. The build up, the interplay, and then the through ball for McClure, and the goal he scores actually puts us ahead in the tie. But it was like a proper Celtic goal. You know, it was one and two touch. And then obviously, he, my favourite Celtic goal of all time, he created the assist. Love Street, 86. And I think it was the third goal. You know, the passing down the right-hand side of the park, starting off with Bain, McStay, Aitken. And then McClure squares it across to some guy who I won't mention his name. And that's my favourite Celtic goal ever. I don't know, I'm kind of impressed by players who you look at them and you think, well, he's not going to get past that centre half, but they've got some ability that gives them that kind of edge, if you like.
Yeah.
And he scored all different types of goals. He scored with the head, took penalties, done well against Rangers, and obviously when you make the jump to Man United again, it's kind of proof that you're no bad, you know.
But I mean, even I listened to a podcast recently. They were talking about Man United's like 1996 season, and he still played like 20 plus games for Man United. You know, this isn't like early United being good. This is like 3-4 years into United winning titles. Mm-hmm. And he's still there or thereabouts getting used. So he clearly had a lot of time. How did he play a lot of games for Scotland? What happened there?
I think they played him. The way he played at Celtic was kind of just somewhere in between, like a number 10 almost.
Yeah.
Or just off the front, but he played more kind of deep line midfield position for Scotland. I don't remember him really playing that well for Scotland.
But I mean, he could score goals as well. Like, he did have one season, didn't he? A sort of, you know, Larson treble season where he scored like 40 plus, didn't he?
Yeah, I won the Golden Boot. Won the Golden Boot one season. I was out. McClure was a goal machine. And again, I remember when he first came into the team, he scored four goals against Dundee. We fucked Dundee. I think it was up at Dens Park. And then the next game was a European game against Arhouse. And Davy Hay put him in the bench. And he played Jim Melrose instead. And every Celtic fan's like that. Hold on. We've just had a guy score four.
Yeah.
Right? Which is, you know, it's pretty decent. So what we'll do is, in the next game, we'll play this other guy who's, you know, it's not really happening for.
I've never even heard of Jim Melrose. Who was Jim Melrose?
Oh. He was supposed to be the guy who was going to replace Charlie Nicholas. But he famously scored, it was either Tannadice or Pittodrie. He used to get a bit of stick for the Celtic fans. But a lot of the kind of play would break down at him and stuff, and the goals were hard to come by. But he famously, I remember him, he scored up at either Tannadice or Pittodrie, I think it was Tannadice. And he gestured to the Celtic fans in a... not very nice fashion. So I don't think he, you know, after that, it kind of, the script was written, really.
Yeah, the knives are out.
From what I remember, it wasn't great. It wasn't the worst, but it wasn't great. But
certainly not getting in this team.
I suppose try to replace Charlie Nicholas. It's a bit of a tall order. It's a bit like when Henri Camara tried to replace Larson.
Yeah, that wasn't happening. Right, that front three is something. I like the shape of this team, and I like the dynamic, the back four is a back four, the midfield's a midfield, and that front three is just going to ruin everyone. Aye, that's a good team. I like this. I don't know if I prepped this, but the way we end the show is I ask you, tell us which player we never signed in your time that you think we realistically could have and should have.
Well, I read a few years ago, Mo Marcella was friendly with Didier Drogba, and he had intimated to Silla that he would be interested in joining him at Parkhead. And Momo, in his wisdom, says, oh, no, you probably not get a game because we've got Sutton, Larson and Hartson. And he went, right, OK, what I'll do is I'll go to Marseille, then Chelsea, and then become one of the best strikers in world football.
Yeah, for the next decade.
I've obviously tweaked that version a wee bit, but I think it was a case of a wee bit of bad advice there for Momo.
That is a proper one that got away, that one, isn't it?
No half.
Then he's not getting in ahead of Larson. To be fair to Momo.
You could bring him on last 10 minutes, like away to Inverness or something.
He'd have done a job.
Aye. Just fire long balls up to him. Just see how he gets on.
Drogba was an absolute brilliant footballer.
Aye.
Yeah, he'd have done a job, and he'd have been more useful than the Henri Camara in the post-Larson era.
Aye, he was slightly better than Jim Melrose.
Right, excellent. Okay, Kez, thanks for doing the podcast. That was very entertaining. And everyone else, thanks for listening. Hail, hail.
Hail, hail, Anthony. Cheers.
This podcast was brought to you by Supersound.
Supersound.